The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Cammy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you, sister?
Hi, thank you for having me.
This is a pleasure. This is going to be it might be a challenging conversation for some, but a much needed one for many. Where do we start? Where do we're going to have to start with you. And who are you? What is your background? And where do we find ourselves in 2021? And bring us up to the situation that you were involved in, if you don't mind. I'm just going to hand it over to you and I'm going to sit back and be a sponge.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for having me again. So I am the founder of an organization, Global Education Philanthropists, and I was a school teacher for years in the States. And I started an organization to bring education to empower other communities, third world countries especially, that didn't have what I knew my students in the States had. Well, I went to the country of Haiti first off, and I went by myself with like stars in my eyes, just, you know, my teacher and my working in my administrative credentials, thought I'd be a school principal. And I have a huge network of teacher friends here in the States. And I thought, we're going to bring all of us, we're going to go to these villages and build these schools and do all these things. So I went by myself to Haiti, which I would not suggest anybody do. It's not a smart way to do it, but I went to this orphanage and was my first interaction. And I was taken back by the fact that the kids in this orphanage had been victims of sex trafficking. I had never heard what that word meant. This was about 5 years ago.
Can you explain what sex trafficking is?
Is when you're getting used for sex. You know, they make money on your body and by force or coercion, and you're trapped in some sort of transactional lifestyle where you have to sell your body for sex in order to get money or food or necessities of life. And when I went to that orphanage in Haiti, it was a safe place for children that had been victims of sex trafficking.
What ages are we talking about here?
We're talking infant up to 18 years old.
That's a lot to take in. So tell us about your experience in Haiti then and how you found out this information.
I walked in, or I went through these orphanage gates, and there was a boy that was the same age as my teenage boys. And I just, I couldn't help but transpose my kid's face in his face, you know. And I just fell in love with the sweet boy and I instantly was like, that's my child. And I just knew that I needed to make sure he got access to education. And so I went to the school that all these kids went to, and that's where my education, we supply solar and things right now still to this day to that school they go to, but it's the largest orphanage in the country. And they go to the largest school in the country. But this young boy, his story, how it happened was I went through the gates of this orphanage and there's kids as far as your eye can see. It's this huge, massive compound. And there's naked, crying babies. There's teenagers. There's just a different world than I'd ever viewed. I thought I understood what a third world country was, but I didn't until that minute. I realized, oh my gosh. And I asked my friends on the ground that I'd made in the short time that I was there, what these kids' story was. There was such a language barrier. What happened to this boy? Where did he come from? And they said, he was a victim of sex trafficking. And I said, what? They said, yeah, he was sex trafficked in the Dominican Republic, brought over to Haiti, and now he's here. Then I went to his sister. His sister had the same story. Sex trafficked in the Dominican Republic, brought over to Haiti, and is now in this orphanage because they got him rescued. The story kept repeating. There was over 250 kids in this orphanage. Very similar streams of the story kept repeating. That was my first interaction. It was so overwhelming that it was really difficult for me to put that story away when I came back to the States. So I continued on my mission of educating those kids, providing the school with STEM labs. And I built computer labs and brought droves and droves of humanitarian workers over. But I really struggled coming back to the States and dealing in my classroom and then going back to, like, you know, their school. And I did the same thing again. I'm like, wait a minute. He was trafficked in the Dominican Republic and brought to Haiti. I'm going to the Dominican Republic. I want to see what it is. So I got on a plane and I went to the Dominican Republic and I started researching where the networks were moving people, why and how, and starting to try to grasp what this monster was. It sounds so awful that these children have been through this. So fast forward to 2021, I've been on a 5-year long, very deep, intense research of what is human trafficking. I got really involved for a few years in the Caribbean with organizations, law enforcement, social work, orphanages that are trusted, and helped get people to safety and keep them out through a healing and empowering them to stay out of the cycle of trafficking. But it's so much more complicated than it might seem at first. So I got really involved in the Caribbean for a couple of years. And then I came back home and a friend here had her daughter trafficked. And she called me and said, my daughter has been trafficked. And I'm like, what, here? Like, what? I don't know. That's not what happens. She said, yes, she did get trafficked. She got mad at me, went to hang out with her friends. They went out on a girls' night, these young girls, and then they ended up getting taken by very dangerous traffickers. Thank heavens they found the girl. But I had a hard time. Again, it was another adjustment, understanding how it could happen in my own town, in my own neighborhood. Then I started going, all right, fine, let's help in my own backyard and abroad. And I started doing extractions in the States about every other week, going to these usually non-permissive areas with survivor leaders and helping get these girls away from gang leaders, cartel leaders, you name it. I was in the trenches of the darkest parts of our world. And thank heavens, an organization found me and said, you need to get trained properly. Like, what the heck does that mean? Because that would be really nice. I just was so hard, like, let's go. We got to save all the people. So then I got trained properly. Now I'm an extraction specialist and we get called. Our group has, you know, operators that are constantly working. This last week, we've helped, you know, get 3 girls out from my area, constantly working to keep these kids out, these women, these boys, and also to prevent. I see what happens on the other side. And so we're working on some exciting projects. I teamed up with an Australian producer, actually, with a creative producer. Her name's Holly Massey. And we're working on a really robust prevention initiative where we are working on a documentary and then creating a platform where anybody that wants to help in this space, as far as healing, extraction, prevention, and wants to just get involved in any way, they can come and find resources because we have such a large asset and a network, a global network. And the only way we can be stronger on the globe is to understand we are all one and to work together. So that's where I'm at now. I do this full time and I want the world to know the current tactics of the traffickers because they are much more aggressive than you think. So at first it happens in Haiti in this faraway village. Okay, wait, maybe it happens in Haiti in the DR. Maybe it happens in the States. Now I can tell you there's not one of our neighborhoods that has not been affected by human trafficking. And I really want people to understand that there is digital trafficking. It all starts online, and our world is this big now. 80% of the missing kids we look for now were first groomed online. Think about how you buy things now. It's all changed with the advent of the internet. It's changed the way people buy people as well. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm in a really, really strong place of, I want people to be empowered through education, because you can't prevent something you don't know is happening. A trafficker can make $1 million on a child. And it dawned on me about a year and a half ago, I was working with a company in Asia that rescues kids by the hundreds, because sometimes culturally they become just slaves, right? In these rice fields. And it dawned on me that those kids, before they were sold by their parents into slavery, they didn't have any clue. Same with the cases I'm working in the States or over in Europe or Ireland, or I work all over the world, Cambodia, Thailand, Belize, Costa Rica. Before it happens, they didn't know. They thought that they were okay. And studying how the brain works, being an educator, I had this, you know, revelation, or I don't know the right word, but that, hey, if we can tell the kids what the dangers are, they will do amazing things. But parents right now, they don't have the information, and the kids don't have the information. And we're filming a documentary right now showcasing the most current tactics of traffickers in a way that the kids can become empowered, because they're sitting on this battlefield that we know as the internet. They're sitting on this battlefield playing games, engaging in social media, not understanding that they have a target on their back. They have no way to defend themselves, and they don't know that they're the target of all of it. So our documentary is very near and dear to my heart, and we're going to be working on that in 2021. And that's kind of where we're at as of today.
First off, congratulations, if that's the right word, but you know, what a hero you are to so many. And wow, it's so, you know, I have two daughters myself that are 16 and 14 and a half, and I grew up very naive. I have to be completely honest here, completely naive. I had what, now that I look at it, was just such a beautiful childhood. Sure, there were some issues with parents separating and so on, but I didn't even understand what sexual harassment or pedophilia or any of this was until I was an adult, because it had never been in my, it just wasn't part of my upbringing. And then when I started actually having relationships with women and dating and as an adult and speaking to other people, I was blown away by how prevalent and how common sexual harassment, rape to children is. And I still struggle to get my head wrapped around that, because I just can never understand how it could ever be. Like I don't. And it's so foreign, and so I can't even picture it, because it's just, I don't want to picture it, because it's never been part of my reality. And I've struggled with this over the years, because, and as a father, yeah, I just can't picture it, but it happens, and it happens more than I'm sort of speechless about this whole thing.
Well, it's a lot. You know, there's a lot of things in the media the last few years that have started to talk about this topic. But, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you couldn't even say this word without people freaking out. Like, I don't want to talk about it. And I understand that it's not a comfortable topic. But I will tell you that the root problem is pornography. And I'm with you. I grew up, I never saw pornography. Like, I didn't understand. But I will tell you this. Unfortunately, parents, if you have a child that is over 6 years old, they've seen pornography. I'm not trying to be like a doomsday bearer of bad news. I just know the analytics, the data on a global scale, on a micro scale, that's the target age in their games, in their apps. And so if that's why it's so important for me, to me, that people understand the threat, because we don't know that trafficking can happen to anyone. And it looks like your kid sitting next to you on an iPad and you don't know who they're talking to. We've seen a case where it was, well, many times it actually happens, like this case that just came to mind, as simple as an inbox message that says, hey, that's the grooming process starting. Hi. So we had a case here in the States where I noticed a girl was, or, you know, she went left with the bad guy. But looking at the evidence, she was groomed on a game that's commonly used by kids. And we could see the conversation started very innocently, like, hello, hi, where you think it's a fellow kid. By the time she actually left with the trafficker was a few years later, but we've been able to gather all this data, looking at all the stuff that people think goes away. It doesn't go away, actually. And we were able to retrieve snaps and things like that and inform a case and formulate who we thought had her. So on the fly, we made a fake Snapchat account, sent this man a message. It said, hey. He said, hey. Next sentence he said was, send me a nude. That's the conversation our kids are living in right now. Hey, send me a nude. And that moment was pivotal to me. Because I was like, I think I know what's happening out there in traffic. No, I didn't. I was watching it on live time going, are you serious? This is what our kids are living in. And so I do a lot of public speaking. I've done school assemblies. I do all sorts of awareness things. And my next time I was in Ireland talking to a group of parents and teenagers. And I said, when were you last asked for a nude? And I've never steered the conversation that way. I was mortified even asking them that. I thought, okay, I'm going to go for it. And they're like, oh my gosh, this adult knows what's going on. I'm like, hey, fine. Don't answer that. You don't have to give me a number, but give me a thumbs up if you've been asked for a nude in the last day. Every single kid's thumbing up. Parents in the back of the room, faces would go white, right? It's just important for parents to understand the world that they live in is so different than what we even know. And because parents do a really good job of making them feel safe, they're really naive and vulnerable and thinking that whoever is on the other side of that screen really is a friend until they're not. So the numbers look like this. It only takes, if a pedophile wants to go get a child and hang out with the child, where are they going to go? They're going to go to the games that the kids play. And it only takes, the data shows us, between 24 and 72, mostly 24, but we'll give you out on the outside edge, 72 hours for a child of any socioeconomic status background to send a stranger a nude as young as 7 years old. I'm not saying this out of just things off the top of my head. I'm telling you this from actual Homeland Security's data from my country. You can look at it in your own. There's what's called the TIP report, trafficking in persons report, for all of our countries that are listening to this, and you can find more data. Now, understand that that's only numbers that are reported, but just know that the issue is vast, but we have the power right now to change it, to start to have some of these uncomfortable conversations. I totally understand that it's a foreign concept to be like, what? Why would they want to talk to my kid? And then it's more foreign for the kids to think, why would a bad guy want to talk to me? But guess what? They will, because they can make $1 million on that child. They can sell them for about $250,000 a year for sex, and then they're going to sell them for their organs when they're done. So if parents understood the grandiose threat, they'd start the conversations about porn with their kids at a young age and say, hey, these are the foods that you eat. This is how you treat your body. You should exercise and eat the right foods. And you shouldn't view these images because it does this to your brain. And have conversations at an age level appropriate with your kids that start opening up these conversations that might feel uncomfortable at first, but it will save them. So they know that they can come talk to you, because what we're seeing is sometimes, I've seen many times where they're so guilt stricken with the position they've got themselves in a conversation online that they'll commit suicide, that they'll agree to go with people that they wouldn't otherwise. They just don't want their parents to know. So we can start having these, I'm sorry, but uncomfortable conversations about what they're seeing on their screen. Hackers will get into their games, and really violent rape scenes are going on in the background where our kids are so young, they don't really understand what they're looking at yet. But the internet is a playground that's very dangerous. And the the abuse, like the live stream and on-demand abuse is what we're seeing a spike in. And I think we need to be better. We need to use the internet to be amazing, to share light, to share positive messages. We need to look at our own social media profiles. If we're using it to look like a sex symbol, why would you expect your kids not to? We just need to start being a little bit better, because I see what happens on the other side of that. And we need to, you know, I'm really sensitive personally to the over-sexualization of what we interact with online, and just think, I want to use the internet to be amazing. And if I interact with someone online, are they going to feel light and love? Or are they going to feel maybe a different message?
The thing that I can't get my head wrapped around right now is, why are you out there doing this when we have law enforcement?
Really great question. I had wondered that myself. Why would people, why is this still going on, right? Why in the world is this still going on? We have cops, I will tell you where this is happening. Law enforcement's been there already. They've already been to that place 6 times, 7 times. What people don't understand is most times victims will return to their perpetrator, their trafficker, 7 to 15 times. So the places we go to, the law enforcement has been to that house 5, 6 times. They've tried. The traffickers have gotten arrested, but their prosecution is so limited. We have a lot of policies and laws in most countries. Sweden does a really good job with prosecuting the Johns, the people that buy sex with these with minors. But we just have a long ways to go with prosecution. Right now, you know, if you were to arrest a whole bunch of people in a situation, it just turns into a cycle. Many times that's where the minor at some point thinks, okay, maybe this is love. It only takes on average of 3 weeks for a trafficker to convince that victim. I hate to say victim because they're not really, but that victim, that this is your family now. You know, they get branded, they go through a lot more than you can understand. And so these trauma bonds form and they go back. So I know that law enforcement, most agencies go to your local law enforcement and talk about trafficking. You guys will be concerned about the same places, the same areas, the same bad guys, but they're doing all they can and they need our help too. Cops need our help too. So
is it escalating? What's happening around the globe?
Yeah, absolutely. Human trafficking is the fastest growing enterprise on the planet. It's surpassing drug trafficking, arms trafficking, because you can resell it, a person, as a commodity again and again and again, essentially until they die. And the demand, who's doing this, who's buying it, right? As the pornography consumption rises, so does the need, so does that perpetrates the problem of human trafficking. So most...
Explain that for me. Explain the pornography.
The root problem is porn, right? So pornography is tied to so many sexual assault cases. And those that are buying sex with minors have a porn addiction every time. Many of them are pedophiles. So they get addicted to pornography and what I've seen, I will only speak to what I've seen firsthand. And I'll only speak to something that I've seen more than once. They get addicted to pornography or start watching pornography. And then they want, it starts an appetite for that. And then they need like something stronger, a more violent, a more next level porn. And then we'll get into, they'll go to Vegas and buy a prostitute to act out what happened on a porn. Then they want a younger one and a younger one, younger one. Then they fly to Thailand or something for sex tourism. You know, this is just an example of how it's tied. And the uptick in pornography consumption with people on their screens, since COVID, the consumption of pornography has gone through the roof. Traffickers can get to our kids on the internet. It's changed how we buy and sell people. Not we, meaning how the transactions happen. It's so easy. You know, I was just took part in the Super Bowl here in the States. a 10-day long sting operation. And during that operation, I was working with multiple organizations, human trafficking task force, and it's just amazing to see people come out to do the right thing. And we were noticing as we were leading up to it, I was working with these other organizations on the ground in Tampa, and over 30,000 online ads were posted soliciting sex with minors for that weekend in the Tampa Bay area. That has nothing to do with the Super Bowl. I'm not calling the Super Bowl out. I'm just saying when there's large playoff games or large concerts or gatherings, people come for any experience they can get. And sex with a minor is one. Then the uptick in consumption in child pornography is absolutely obscene. So yes, it's on the rise. And our consumption of illicit images is on the rise. And our kids are getting introduced to these images in such a way we don't even as adults understand, because we've never ever had to interact with that type of just normal. And unfortunately, our kids have a different, they'll have a totally different view of what intimacy looks like, because it's what they're exposed to is more difficult that they can't talk about with you, because it's just, you know, as adults, it's just awkward. So we want to break down the barriers and say, okay, we're not going to shame you. We understand that you are the first generation to grow up online. And we as parents have to do more. Talk to me about it. What have you seen? Who are you talking to? That's the key, is to know who your kids are talking to online and let them know that they can trust you. I know.
It's a lot. It's a lot. I always look for solutions with my guests, you know, and generally the topics revolve around health and wellness and long-term sustainable health. And I think you just answered it then, what the role of the parent is.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've noticed over the last 12 months is there seems to be nearly a push to normalize pedophilia in certain areas, and that it might be considered a disease or a preference, as I've seen written about before. Which, why doesn't the media touch this? And I know in this country, in Australia, there's lots of rumors about the political realm with this type of thing, and also with the justice system and the judicial arena. I'm talking about judges here, that there may be some sort of crossover or shit going down in those realms, in the highest levels of what we would consider once upon a time places that we could trust. Tell me about that. Tell me about the normalization of this. If this is an agenda, and if it is, who is it by? And talk to me about the political and justice system with the judges and the politicians. Is there a prevalence in those organizations for this, for these actions? And then we'll get into solutions.
We'll get to solutions. I have some ideas. I have it. Don't worry. It's coming. So what I would say is this, working all over the world, and being a mom, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma. I am fighting for our kids, for your kids. And I want people to join me, because we can't rely on what we thought these systems were supposed to do stuff for us. It's a flawed way of thinking in my book, because we are our own person with our own accountability. And if we want our own families to be protected, you have to start with you. To speak to the corruption, I believe it goes to the highest possible, if you could imagine the highest possible level, all the way down to the lowest possible level. People in just...
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.